Thank you so much for this incredible moment we have to gather together tonight as we continue this series on knowing ourselves, God. We ask that you would give us the courage, the wisdom, the humility, and the grace to honestly look at who we are. And we pray that understanding who we are would lead us to invite you in to transform us. In your name we pray. Amen. On May 8th, 2013, a 77-year-old man passed away of pancreatic cancer. He wasn't a pastor. He didn't lead an organization of hundreds or thousands. As a matter of fact, he didn't lead anything. He was just a college professor. But a few weeks later, when his funeral came along, pastors, theologians, philosophers, psychologists, and leaders from all around the country dropped everything in order to get to this man's funeral. Because his passing signaled to the Christian world the fact that someone of profound significance to the American church had been lost. If you have ever heard me use phrases like spiritual formation, or several months ago when I talked about following Jesus and I used this mental image of apprenticeship, and we talked about what that's all about. If you've heard any phrases like that, your life has been directly impacted by this man. Yours and countless thousands of followers of Jesus all around the country and all around the world. His name was Dallas Willard, and he was a writer and a college professor. And it is fascinating to me how many influential Christian leaders trace their spiritual development back to this one man. This one man who passed away in a small house in the middle of California. From that one place, ripples passed out across the world, inspiring men and women to live more like Jesus. What I thought was interesting and most important about that is during his funeral, one of the eulogies that was given for him was given by a pastor of a very large church of thousands and thousands. And this particular man, his name is John Ortberg, stood before the group of people gathered, and he said, "We have lost a great soul today." See, that is what Dallas Willard was remembered for. He was remembered, he will be remembered for being a great soul. He wrote about things like character and integrity. Not normal things to think about in the 21st century. And what is amazing to me about the life of Dallas Willard is that every time I hear a speaker refer back to him, they talk about the fact that Dallas Willard lived everything he taught. And I think that is the mark of someone who has a great soul. Someone who deeply understands. You know, Christian speakers talk about all sorts of things. There are people in the Christian world who talk about how to be a leader and people who talk about how to run a church and people who talk about all sorts of things. Dallas Willard decided he was going to devote his life to understanding how to develop character, and he was going to talk about that. A man like that had better be holding himself up to a pretty high standard, right? Because you will know the value of his talking about character based on whether or not he knows how to live character. We know he lived what he preached because his grandchildren are passionately following Jesus and said so at his funeral. All of this because Dallas Willard was a great soul. Have you known somebody that you could describe that way? Somebody who was just a great soul. Somebody who had a certain depth to them. Somebody that when you talked to them, you had a clear sense that they were living their lives differently. Differently from the world. Not just a little different, but profoundly different. You can tell these kinds of folks because they sort of take their time to answer, I think. And when they speak, everything that they say seems to be just clearly refined wisdom. I think that's the result of having a great soul. And one of the most exciting things to me about Dallas Willard is that what he said about having a great soul is that it's something that could be cultivated. You can train your own soul to be a great soul. That was the essence of the claim that he made for his entire life. People aren't born with great souls. They're not born with great character. They're not born with great integrity. All of that is a result of training. And wherever we start the journey, we can train ourselves to become people with great souls. We can train ourselves to be people of great integrity. And that's a lot of what we're talking about in this series. We're in a four-part series called Know Thyself. The essence of it is that we are the clay that we have available to us in this process of forming a Christ-like self in the world. I can't do a lot to change you, right? Like, has anybody ever tried to change another person? It is profoundly impossible, if not difficult. But I can change me. And in order to change myself, I need to know myself. I can't change myself if I don't know who I am. So that's a lot of what we talked about last week, and we talked a lot. We're framing our series based on a verse that from the life of Jesus. Jesus said you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. So we're taking those four elements of the self, and we are examining what they are and how they fit into the larger whole of who we are, and therefore how we can transform each of those elements of ourselves into what Jesus wants them to be. So that's a little bit about where we're going. We're going to start tonight in Psalm 43:5. Psalm 43:5. Tonight we are going to examine the soul. I had planned on putting the soul at the end of the series for what will probably become an obvious reason, but I wanted to pull it up a little bit earlier because I think it's incredibly important as we talk about knowing ourselves and then allowing ourselves to be transformed. It is the soul that gives us the capacity to do that. And so I want to make sure we have an understanding of what our souls are. Psalm 43:5 is where you are in the Bible. Psalm 43:5. And it just says this. It says, "Why are you cast down, O my soul?" I'm reading this from English Standard Version, by the way. Normally we read from the New Living Translation. But I'm reading it from a different translation today for a very specific reason. So if yours looks a little different, this is why. "Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my soul and my God." I think it's fascinating that in this moment, this poet, this divinely inspired poet who wrote the Psalms, is talking to his own soul. Have you ever talked to your own soul? I'm like, you know, soul? You know, we have switched in our culture to talking about ourself. Have you ever heard the phrase, "I said to myself, self"? Right? Like, we talk to ourselves, we don't talk to our souls. The word self, of course, is a kind of, it's kind of a boring word if you think about it. The word self really speaks to how I differentiate from whoever else is around me, right? It is why Joshua is different from Bobby, is different from everybody else here. It's just, I'm myself, you're yourself. But it's not a very deep word, right? It doesn't go deep into who I am. It doesn't speak to the inner life that I may or may not have. The psalmist does not talk to his self. He talks to his soul. And we all have this instinct, I think, that the soul is somehow this really deep thing deep down inside of me that's like a definitely a thing. And beyond that, I think we often have absolutely no idea. If I were to ask you right now, as a matter of fact, if you have your phone out or if you have a piece of paper handy, I'm going to give you 30 seconds on your phone or on a piece of paper to try to jot down a definition of soul. What is a soul? Just try to jot that down. You have 30 seconds. What's a soul? Remember that you can't use the word in the definition, right? We all went to English class. We remember that. And you have to figure out how, in your definition, to distinguish soul from things like heart and mind. So what is soul? Well, in order to begin to explore this, I want to paint a picture of what the soul is all about by painting a picture of how the various pieces of the person fit together. And this is straight from Dallas Willard. I am 100% stealing this. So if you like it, you can go find it. But Willard, when he's talking about ourselves, he starts with a series of concentric circles, and he begins with one middle circle that he titles the will. At the core of every one of us, there is the capacity to choose, right? That's what the will is. The will is the piece of us that can make choices. And it does this fairly well in certain circumstances, right? If I want to make a big decision in my life where all of the potential repercussions are obvious, I might be able to make a pretty easy decision. One-time things, the will does fine. The will does fine in things that are inconsequential. But the will definitely has its limits, doesn't it? Have you ever really wanted to choose something and then not? Legitimately wanted it. You had the will to choose, and yet somehow something was blocking your choosing. You ever had that moment in your life? Moments where we go against our own principles, even our own desires. Why is that? So often it is because the will is limited by the other aspects of our personhood. And so right outside that circle comes another limiting circle, and this circle is the heart and the mind. We talked a little bit about the heart last week. The heart is the part of us that recognizes patterns in the world and tries to relate those patterns to the current situation. So, for example, I used this example last week, if you weren't here, if you walked into church one week and I was standing in the back and I kicked you in the shins, and the next week you walked in and I kicked you in the shins, and the third week the same thing happened, and the fourth week and the fifth week the same thing happened, and the sixth week the same thing happened, eventually there would be a pattern in your mind that would tell you you needed to act differently, right? Your will, as a result of that pattern, would either choose to wear shin guards or go to a different church, right? Now, let's say that that seventh week, I happen to not be here for some reason. I'm visiting our Revere location, or I'm on vacation, or I'm super sick. Does any of that actually impact your decision? No, because you don't know those facts, right? What informs your will is not the facts about reality, but it is the patterns you have stored in your mind that your heart accesses that tell you what probably will happen in the present moment. Does that make sense? So we're always acting with our wills, not based on reality, but based on our ability to recognize patterns. And we recognize those patterns based on information we've stored in our mind. Now, sometimes, unfortunately, we have various patterns we recognize that make us want to act in different ways. Have you ever felt torn in a situation? So, for example, this actually really happened a couple of years ago. After one of our services, a woman pulled me aside. That was she was just visiting our church, and she was very frustrated about something. And she was about 3 or 4 years older than me. And she was very, very frustrated with me and wanted to make sure I knew. That's okay. People are allowed to be frustrated. That's certainly reasonable. But what's interesting to me is that this kicked into gear several patterns that I have in my heart. One of those patterns comes from a woman in my family who is exactly the same age as this woman that was talking to me that particular Sunday, and who had a similar build and kind of similar hair color. And so all of a sudden, I was getting mentally triggered by a pattern regarding a person that wasn't even in the room. I also had another set of patterns going on in my head. I knew we were in a church where I was the pastor. And so I know that even though that first pattern really made me, like, instinctively, I went to helpless. Oh, there's nothing I can do in this situation. But I had another set of patterns telling me, no, that is incorrect. In fact, you deal with complicated situations literally in this room almost every day of your life. You can probably figure out something to do in this situation. Sometimes we have different patterns that all act on the same situation that want us to respond in different ways. And our will gets caught in the middle of all of that. And so sometimes we respond in one way, sometimes we respond in another way, sometimes we just freeze up. Our will is deeply limited by the design of our heart and mind. We don't get to just do whatever we want. But then our heart and mind are limited once again. Our heart and mind are limited by our bodies. Our heart and mind are limited by our bodies. My body is my kingdom. I have, in theory, complete authority as an adult over the physical space my body is occupying. I get to decide what my body is going to do, and nobody else does. I remember trying to instill this in my daughter from a very, very young age. And so, to this day, my 8-year-old daughter can say things like, "No, I don't want my picture taken. No, I don't want a hug." She gets some level of control over her body. And that's a really important lesson we all need to know. We have control over our body. So, if I come out and I swing at Pastor Roy and hit him in the face, I can't say somebody else made me do it, can I? Right? Like, well, you know, like, I don't know, let's pretend he made me mad or something. I can't be, well, you made me mad and so it's your fault. Nope, it's my body. I'm in control of it. There is no way in which I can blame somebody else for something my body did. It's my body. However, my body has an autopilot, doesn't it? Your body ever gone on autopilot? How many of you have laces on your shoes today? How many of you thought about tying them? Not too many, right? We don't think about that anymore. We just do it. I remember the first time I was on autopilot in my car, and I just drove where I was not supposed to drive. My eyes and my hands and my feet drove the car without a single conscious thought in my brain because I was talking to the person next to me. And I drove safely, and this happens to most of us. Most of us have these moments where we're like, I just wasn't paying attention, and I got home or I got wherever, right? Our bodies, in so many circumstances, small and great, by our training, kind of kick into this autopilot thing. And so I don't quite have complete control. There's also things about my body I don't get to control. For example, do not try to control your breathing. It won't be good for you. Don't try to control your heart. It won't be good for you. You don't get to control everything about you, but your body is the sphere in which you have the greatest control, and it is your only interface with the physical world. Does that make sense? It is the only way I get to interface with the world around me. The world around me is physical. I have all this physical stuff, and if I want to change the page that my notes are on, or if I want to shake your hand, or even if I want to just communicate that I'm happy to see you, I have to use my body to do it. I have to smile at you. And you have to use your body to receive it. You have to look at my smile. Our bodies are the only interface we have for this world. But our bodies are limited in at least two ways that I can think of. First, they limit us as to where we can do what is on our mind or in our wills or in our hearts, right? Right now, at this moment, I may wholeheartedly and with all my mind and will want to radically change something that is going on in South Dakota. But I cannot do that because I am not in South Dakota. I may, with all my heart and mind, with all my will, want to change something that is going on in Honduras. I can't do it. My body limits my interaction with the world so that I can only do something here. Second, my body limits the way that I can interact with the world. I am physically limited by the inherent weaknesses of being a physical being. So, for example, I cannot work 3 or 4 22-hour days in a row and not harm myself. That is not something I am capable of doing. I can want to with all my heart. I can think the work is worth doing. I can recognize patterns that tell me that it is important work to do. And I can do all of that, but nevertheless, my body has limitations. I cannot, in fact, actually do that. Similarly, there is the limitations that I have trained into my body. So, for example, in my case, I can, in fact, run 5 miles. That's something I can do. I could not today run 20 miles. Does that mean there is an inherent limitation in my body? No. It means I have not physically trained my body to be able to run 20 miles. I could, in theory, do that. The other kind of limitation that comes up that I was mentioning about weakness, I have a messed up knee and I may not actually be able to accomplish that in my case. But generally speaking, we can train our body. So we're limited by the inherent limitations or weaknesses of our body, and we are limited by the ways in which we have trained our body. And all of those weaknesses limit our heart, our mind, and our will. Which brings us to the outside circle. Now, if I had talked about this with you in advance, and I said there's a whole bunch of outside circles, I mean a whole bunch of concentric circles, and one of them is the mind, and one of them is the body, and one of them is the will, and one of them is the soul, you probably would have thought the body was going to be the outside one, and the soul was going to be the inside one. At least that is what I thought when I first saw this illustration. I thought, all right, we're going to start on the outside, and whatever order it goes in, we'll get to the middle. the soul is always in the core of the person. It's clearly that deep inside thing. And yet, I am going to put the soul on the outside. It's going to be the outside circle. Why? Because the soul's function in the body is to be the orchestrator or the controller for all the other parts. Dallas Willard said it this way: what is running your life at any given moment is your soul. Not external circumstances, not your thoughts, not your intentions, not even your feelings, but your soul. The soul is that aspect of your whole being that correlates, integrates, and enlivens everything going on in the various dimensions of the soul, of the self. The soul is the life center of human beings. The essence of what he's saying there is that it is the soul that takes the body and the mind and the heart and the will and weaves them together into one single human being, rather than a whole bunch of pieces that are trying to go in different directions. Now, so in essence, the soul is the part of us that is trying to order us, bring order to the chaos within us. Now, I don't know about you, but I have had plenty of moments in my life where it did not feel like there was any internal order to what my mind wanted and what my heart wanted and what my will wanted and what my body wanted. For example, this morning, my heart told me that I needed to exercise because I had not exercised adequately in the last couple of days. And if I don't exercise, I'm very edgy. I'm very anxious. And so my heart recognized this pattern, and I was drawn to the idea of exercising. Unfortunately, my heart also recognized another pattern. I did, in fact, run yesterday, just not much. And my heart recognized another pattern, which is that if I run 2 days in a row, my knee hurts really bad. So my heart was pulling me in different directions. My will really wanted to have a quiet moment this morning where I could be still and pray. But I physically couldn't relax. I really had a hard time being still. My body has limits on it as to how it could run, and my body had habits of sleep that I needed to overcome when I got up this morning. And my body has certain ways it doesn't work properly in my brain that make it really hard for me to tone down, that make it really hard for me to focus for more than like an eighth of a second on anything. And so with all of that, I was being mentally pulled this morning in like 6 or 8 different directions. It felt like I wasn't one person. It felt like I was like 6 people, the guy who wanted to go running, and the guy who wanted to go pray, and the guy who wanted to go back to sleep, and the guy who just wanted to sit and read a book, and the guy who wanted to stop thinking about this because this is exhausting and just have the decision told me so that I can just do whatever I need to do. Right? Like there were just all of these happening inside of me. That is a great example of the disorder that a soul can bring into order. Now, James, in chapter 1, verse 5, gives us a different example of this. James 1, verse 5, has this interesting language, and I want to read it to you. James 1, 5 and through 7 says this. It says, "If you need wisdom, ask our generous God, and he will give it to you. He will not rebuke you for asking, but when you ask him, be sure your faith is in God alone. Do not waver. For a person with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of the sea that is blown and tossed by the wind. Such people should not expect to receive anything from the Lord." See where it says, "Do not waver, for a person with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of a sea." I don't often make these kinds of comments, but if you were to go into the original languages that this was actually written in. This is one of those moments that is very cool because it actually says, do not waver, for a person with a double soul is as unsettled as a wave of the sea. The idea is a person whose soul has not taken full control of themselves, that person is not going to be able to pray right, which I experienced this morning, right? It's our soul, the ordering principle within us. If we have part of us, part of our soul, trying to orchestrate our lives to go in one direction, and part of our soul trying to orchestrate our lives to go in a different direction, we're not going to get anywhere ever, because we'll be pulling in opposite or different directions. And even if those don't seem like very different directions, the further down the journey we get, the further away they'll get from one another. And so this verse is saying, if you want wisdom from God, the only prerequisite in your life is to make sure that your soul is properly governing who you are, is bringing singular unity to yourself, to your being. It's challenging us to allow our soul to bring order to our mind, our heart, our body, and our will. So how do you do that? How do you actually give your soul the opportunity to bring that kind of order? I want to give you three suggestions as we close out tonight. First of all, I want you to know that you are the keeper of your soul. You are the keeper of your soul. You get to train your soul to be whatever you want it to be. So if you want a singular or unified soul, you can train your soul to do that. It takes time, it takes work, it takes effort, it takes energy, but you were designed by God to be able to do that. So that's the good news. How do you do that? Here are my three suggestions. Number one, give your soul space. Number one, give your soul space. In essence, what I mean is slow down. Schedule fewer things in the day. Say no to some stuff. Why? Because when you slow down, when you are able to take things as they come with enough margin between things, you are able to observe what is going on in your heart and your mind and your body and your will. If we're constantly moving, rushing from thing to thing to thing, frantic all the time, we have no idea what is going on in our bodies, our minds, our will, and our heart. We just have no idea. We are failing in the area of self-awareness. Slowing down gives us a chance to make statements to ourselves like, huh, my heart is feeding me this particular pattern. That's interesting. Huh, my will is leading me to want this thing over here. That's interesting. Huh, my body is telling me that I am awfully tired or awfully tense or awfully angry or awfully confused or awfully scared or whatever. But for us to be able to take note of any of those things, we need to have the time to do it, to check in with ourselves. This might look like setting specific times of the day that you intentionally just write one sentence in your phone. It'd be a great idea at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 3 o'clock every day. You just take 1 minute. I don't mean take 20 minutes. I mean you write one sentence. I am tired. I want to yell at so-and-so. Whatever it is at 9 o'clock, whatever it is at noon, whatever it is at 3, you just jot it down real quick, and then you go about your day. That is training yourself to be aware of what's going on in your heart, your will, your mind, your body. It is also reminding you of a fundamental principle that we can't live with well without knowing. And that is, you are not just your heart, and you are not just your body, and you are not just your will. You have, through your soul, the capacity to say no to what your will desires. You have the capacity to say no to your heart and to your mind. You have the capacity to say no to your body. But you cannot say no to any of those things in your life until you slow down enough to notice what they are communicating to you. So giving your soul space gives you the opportunity to do all of that. Second, don't just give your soul space, but give your soul a center. If your soul's job is to arbitrate between your will and your mind and your heart and your body, there needs to be a set of principles by which your soul determines what to say yes to and what to say no to. And that principle will either be imposed on you by friends and family and whoever else, or you will have your own principle. If you want to be a unified person, you can't have other people imposing their values on you, right? Because one minute you'll have a friend impose values on you, and another minute it'll be a family member, and another minute it'll be somebody from work and whatever. And so your soul will be organizing your heart, will, and mind and all of that differently from moment to moment based on who is impacting you in the moment. And that is the opposite of a unified self, right? That's a deeply fragmented self. The way to avoid that is to have your own guiding principle in life. In business, they would call this a mission statement. The ancient monks called this a rule of life. I have a single sentence that I've shared with you several times before that is my guiding principle in life. It is to inform and inspire people in the pursuit of God through being an outstanding husband, father, and associate pastor. And then at the end, in parentheses, it says, in that order, husband, father, associate pastor. That's my guiding principle. So I decide what I'm going to do based on that to the best of my ability all the time. That gives me a chance to say yes or no to my body. It gives me a chance to say yes or no to my will. It gives me a chance to say yes or no to my heart. It gives me a chance to say yes or no to all sorts of things. So I shared that moment that the woman was very angry with me some years ago. And it would have been nice to yell at her. And my heart was telling me that. It was also telling me to run away. But neither of those would have been choices that kept me on my single guiding principle. And so I stayed in the conversation, and I had it with her. And I tried to use that moment to inspire her to move forward in her relationship with Jesus, because that's my goal in everything I do, because it says so on, well, I took years to write that. But that's my thing. That doesn't need to be your thing. Jesus should certainly be a central part of your thing, whatever your thing is. But if you want to be a unified self, a unified person, you need a guiding principle by which you say yes and no to all the internal chaos that happens in your life. Finally, don't just give your soul space and a center, but give it support. Your soul is the place in your being where you encounter and connect with God. God does not want to reach through your soul to change your will. He wants to train you to use your soul to change your own will. God does not want to reach through your soul to change the pattern recognition stuff going on in your heart. He wants to reach into your soul to train you to change the pattern recognition stuff that is going on in your heart. Because he created you, I use the idea of kingdom, your body, your selfhood, your person is your kingdom. God wants you to be a good ruler of your kingdom. And so he will engage with you in your soul every minute of every day to train you and empower you and release you to be the leader of yourself, to allow your soul to become strong enough to control all of those other elements of who you are. So give your soul space, give your soul a center, and give your soul support.